MenaWatch, der unabhängige Nahost-Think-Tank.
Welcome to your new episode of Mena Talk. My name is Jasmine Arimi. I'm a journalist at MenaWatch, and today I'm joined by Shok Muhammad from Wadi, an organization in Iraqi Kurdistan, which have a ground to combat female genital mutilation, also known as FGM. So before we start, also a quick content note. In this episode, we will be talking about FGM, a topic that can be difficult and distressing. So please be careful while you're listening. Thank you for joining us, Shok. Could you briefly introduce yourself and the work from Wadi?
Thank you so much for inviting me for this interview. My name is Shok Muhammad. I'm 31 years old. I've joined Wadi in 2015. This was my first time joining Wadi. I learned that there is something called female genital mutilation in the community and the society that I grew up in. And it was really scary and horrifying to learn that you grow up in a society and such horrific things have happened. And somehow, as a girl, I was spared and I didn't experience something like that in my life. So going back to the work of Wadi, introducing Wadi. Wadi is a German-Iraqi organization, and it has been operating since 92. So Wadi is even older than me. They started mostly working on construction and rebuilding of buildings, old buildings, and helping hospitals and helping women and children in those in the areas in Baghdad, in Amara, south, central and south of Iraq. And then because of the regime pressure at that time, people were advising them to come to the Iraqi, to the Kurdistan region, which is somehow considered a little bit more free area that you can work on. So they started working on providing health awareness and health programs to women and children in the rural areas. They started in an area called Garmian. As we were working on those areas, our local teams started to notice that there were talks about conditions like this, situations that women were complaining a lot, especially about their intimate relationship a little bit. So at that time, it was not really named FGM, so we were not specifically sure that this is FGM or not. But we became completely sure when one time our team members visited a kindergarten, and then they noticed that a significant number of little girls were not present in the daycare. And then they started questioning why this is happening. So then they found out that these girls were taken collectively for FGM, for that practice. So this became the point that Wadi started to really seriously start delving into this topic and how to approach it, considering this is a very, very conservative topic at that time. I'm talking somewhere closer to 2003-2004, which we officially started working on. So aside from these, from the FGM program, Wadi is a very vast organization because we work on multiple other topics related to domestic violence, related to environment, related to economic empowerment and livelihood. So all of these things are all related to each other. So all of these projects are interconnected, and also they all represent and help women to become more visible in the society and more empowered, learn more about their rights and their community and their collective work together. So we are extensively working on that. But FGM has become the signature work of Wadi. We started making research in the areas that I mentioned called Garmian area. And then we found out that 74% of women were actually cut in those areas. We had villages, rural areas that were 100%. So it was really crazy. And then the Ministry of Health in the Kurdistan region at that time obviously they were very angered about these numbers, and they were like, this is not real. So because we already alerted the Human Rights Watch with these numbers, and then they also decided as the government officially to come on board and make their own research on a much larger scale. So we ended up with a number of 42% officially in the Kurdistan region. So this was the official number that we always worked on as Wadi as well. Like, fast forward this number to 2018, that we managed to, with a lot of significant work, to reduce the number to 3%. Wadi also worked on a law that this practice is now banned by law. So this was a really major breakthrough for this topic at that time.
How did you personally become involved in the fight against FGM? Was it just at the work at Wadi and it happened, or was it like a personal topic for you?
To be honest, it was through work. I was just freshly graduated when I joined Wadi, and I have never heard about this practice before. Before joining Wadi, once I saw one of these commercial spots, that awareness spots that they were doing at that time on FGM and in one of the TV channels, and I was like, I really didn't understand what exactly this is, or is this even real? Like, is this happening here? So when I joined Wadi, I joined as an interpreter translator at that time, and all these reports were coming, like with all these horrific stories, and it was really horrifying. And I think it was really an understanding that, okay, I really don't know my society that well.
To go a little bit in the depth, can you explain to the listeners in the West, which maybe some of them even don't know about the practice of FGM, what exactly is female genital mutilation?
To put it shortly, I mean, FGM is the harm of the genitalia area with any means, and that is scratching, cutting, anything of those sorts to the female genitalia area, especially because FGM has their types. So we have type 1, which is cutting or scratching pieces of the clitoris. And then we have type 2, which is cutting a little bit of the clitoris from the top part to the bottom, and also some parts of the labia majora and minora. And then we have the third and fourth type, which are called the pharynx type, that are also much more severe, that they are cutting off everything completely and then they sew it. They call it the pharynx because it's mostly practiced in the pharynx era, and also like mostly in Egypt and the African countries. So for us, from the ones that we have worked with, we only have so far type 1. Most commonly, and in some cases, type 2.
How widespread is FGM in the regions where you work, especially in Iraqi Kurdistan? You were talking about like 42% officially. Is it like a little bit more?
To be honest with you, I think at that time, like I'm talking 24, back in 24, the official number was 42% with the Ministry of Health. We obviously think that this number was more at that time. But because it's an official number, we stick with that official number. However, we believe that it was much more widespread. But if we are talking about right now, with all this consistent work that has been done for this for FGM, it has significantly reduced. But it's not completely finished. I would say now, because it's banned by law, there are people who are looking for a midwife or somebody to do it for them, or usually an older woman to do the act. However, they are finding difficulty in having somebody to do this practice, because they know that they will be jailed, there's going to be some legal consequences that comes with that.
How about the younger generations? Are they thinking differently now about FGM, the younger mothers and fathers?
Mostly they do. Mostly they are obviously not in favor of doing FGM, because a lot of the times the mother are cut themselves, so they know how this feels like. So a lot of them are obviously not with it, and they don't want to do it. somehow still wants to do it, and they are not sure on the religious aspect. They don't know if they are doing something right by not cutting their daughter, or they are mostly afraid of the societal pressure, let's say, or this inter-family pressure from the in-laws, for example, from the mother-in-law. All of these things, they all form this type of pressure on the younger generation. But I'm really happy to report that, like, a lot of them are very brave, and they don't fall into that pressure.
So when we talk about the mothers, which were undergoing the cutting itself, when we talk now about like the short-term physical consequences for girls who undergo FGM, what are the consequences?
Short-term, on a physical aspect, you have the cutting that happens. So a lot of the times there is like severe bleeding that happens. There is wounding that happens, and most of the times they the things, the tools that are used to perform the act, they are not sanitized. They use razors, they use in some points knife or scissors or tweezers. So all of them are not really clean or hygienic, and also in this practice, like, it's done mostly in groups, so the same razor that is cut, that they use, they use it for others as well. So a lot of the times the girls have infections, like severe infections, blood infections, and also like skin reactions, and many of these things. And also on the psychological note, on short term, there's a lot of shock factor that happens. Actually, there was a case long time ago when we were like working and reporting on them. Like this little girl was almost become mute because of the shock that happened. Maybe you can imagine like the scenario. This little girl, many women are holding her. She's screaming. It's a really scary thing for a little girl to happen, for anyone to happen, especially a little girl. And a lot of the times it's the mother who enables this. The mother is with them. Many of the times the mother tricks them. Like, they are like, oh, if you do this, I will get you this. We'll go to this place. We'll buy you toys. We'll buy you this. So there's a betray. We always talk about it. We say that FGM is the first betrayal that a female experience in their life, and it comes through the closest person to them ever, which is the mother. And this in itself, it's conditioning this girl for accepting domestic violence in the future, because this already happened to them. They were already betrayed by their mother. So it affects the family, the relation, and your perspective of a relation. I mean, also talking a bit long term, this little girl grows up with a feeling of violation, and also going closer, like starting puberty and all of that, there's going to be an effect on their menstrual health and their cycles and their infections, and also when they get married, it becomes the number one issue with her husband on a sexual relations, because it affects them so much. And also, it's not just the physical side, it's the psychological side as well, because something extremely dangerous happened to you as a lady, and also considering that there is not much of a really good communication between families or between a husband and wife. So imagine going through this and not being able to speak to your husband, your husband not understanding the situation. So all of this is like a recipe for issues of domestic violence that are happening, or in many cases issues of a second marriage or a second wife that always occurs. So all of these things are all interrelated together. On, like I said, on the psychological notes, it leaves a lifelong effect on women, because one woman told me she's really afraid of the nighttime to come. because she knows she has to be with her husband and she does not want that. She feels like she's raped every time her husband tries anything with her, and her husband does not understand why my wife is cold towards me, and they think that she is hating him. So you can see that where all these different emotions and mixed together untreated, it leaves a really terrible mark on women, short term and long term.
How painful is childbirth when women were cut?
Actually, for that one, a lot of women report to us, like the ones who are cut, that they had difficulty in conceiving. And we have also cases that in the event of a childbirth, they were not cut, but at that time they asked the midwife to be cut, like while giving birth. So another midwife told us that this lady came to give birth at the midwife, and then the mother-in-law was with her, and they saw that she was not cut, and they asked the midwife to cut her. It leaves the question that, okay, if the person is 18 and above, that's a consenting adult, and they asked to be cut, which is not okay in any circumstances, but on a legal side, this is a consenting adult. But it does affect the pregnancy, it does affect conceiving of children, because it's majorly affecting the health of the vagina and the womb and all of these things.
What cultural or social beliefs are there to justify FGM?
First of all, there is the religious aspect. According to one of the schools in the Islam religion, that FGM should be done, and it's based on one hadith or one part that is like actually not, it's not even correct. Like long time ago, something happened, and then you know the Prophet Muhammad went to this lady. He saw that she was cutting women, and he told her it's best to just scratch the surface because it's not good for women. So this happened, and this was confirmed that this is not correct hadith. By the the Cairo University, and we confirmed this. We have this in booklets. We have this in all our materials, that this is not correct. However, this still became widespread through the people. So the religious leaders who really didn't understand, or don't want to understand, they spread this message to the people. So the religious leaders in these villages and rural areas played a crucial part. Because in some areas they were encouraging women to do it, so all of the women did it, and those who did not, they had to go under that pressure because everybody else was doing it, and they were pressurized on the religious aspect as well. So they said that if this girl is not cut, everything that she, all the water that she brings and all the food that she gives to you is haram, and it's prohibited to eat, take, or have anything from her. And beside of that, she will be she will be like a whore, because she's unable to control herself around men and all of these, on all of these talks. So all of these things together, they shaped the religious pressure in order to perform this act. And all the, on the cultural side as well, the peer pressure became the number one point, that all the women in my family are done it, and if I don't do my daughter, then my daughter is going to be an outcast.
So to explain a little bit more of your daily work, what concrete strategies does Wadi use to fight FGM?
Well, Wadi mainly works on combating FGM via awareness seminars. So we meet groups of women in the rural areas, where our team members, we have two team members, one is a lawyer and one is a social worker, and they are meeting with these women. The social worker talks about the cultural, the health aspect of FGM, why it should not be done, and what are the consequences on all of that. And also the lawyer talks about the law, which I mentioned earlier. This is the law of combating domestic violence that was released in 2011. that officially also bans female genital mutilation. So they talk about that law, they talk about all the consequences and all the different situations that are considered FGM, and also along with that they talk about other forms of domestic violence, child marriage, the women's right for filing lawsuit, how would you do that. So all of these things are covered in those seminars, and these seminars are done like 4 times in the week in different areas, usually we do the seminars in a way that we enable the women also to spread this message through their acquaintances as well. So our brochures and our print materials, they are all containing all various kind of information, and we ask them to let us know if they hear about cases of FGM from their circles, that they let us know, and then we will go to these areas and make seminars in those areas as well. We also did many trainings for midwives that have a license, they are officially licensed, on the law especially, that they know by law that FGM is a practice prohibited by law. So if they do anything like that, obviously they would be jailed and their license taken from them. So they also end up spreading that messages and taking various professional trainings on those topics as well.
How do you involve men and religious leaders in the process when you're going there to the rural areas, to the villages?
I mean, we always said that men are the other side of the coin. For us, we talk about our female coordinators and also the team members, they also sit with men and talk about the various topics of domestic violence. But within that, we also discuss female genital mutilation. And I want to say that this practice is mostly very woman-oriented. So the women, the victims are women, and the ones who are enabling it are women. So men are really not part of this equation. So when they, obviously they don't want it, they don't like it, they said, no, we are not supporting this because our wives are like this, we wouldn't want our daughter to feel to have the same issues that we have with our wives. So it majorly affects that. So they are supportive of really combating FGM. And actually, surprisingly, there are also many quests for men as well to learn about their health and their reproductive health as well. So they asked us for programs like this as well. So that came as such a nice surprise that the men that were actually wanting to learn more about their bodies, and that in itself, I think it's a good breakthrough with men, considering how sensitive and how closed off these communities and these societies used to be. As for religious leaders, we have constant connections with the Ministry of Religious Affairs, and the religious leaders, we have done several trainings and several meetings, coordination meetings with them about especially their Friday speeches, because that's when most people are gathering in their mosques. So we encourage them a lot to talk about not exactly specifically FGM, but also talk about domestic violence and harming women and how this is not really part of Islam and not religious. So in some parts, some were helpful and are doing their part, but obviously not all of them are supporting these things, and there's a lot of political and different motives behind those things. Maybe it's not the best to go through it in this interview, but there is a lot of other factors that affects that. And through the Ministry of Religious Affairs, they have some sort of official fatwa, which we pressured them so much to do, to release in terms of FGM, to say that, but they only released a vague statement saying that if an act is more harmful than good, then it should not be done. We are aiming for a statement that says no, you cannot do it, this is haram. But like I said, there is a lot of argument back and forth that this hadith was already existing, and obviously a lot of them say this is not true. So we are kind of left on that, but we are still in connections, and there is no denying they have a really major role in communities.
But there are also now villages which declared themselves FGM free. How does the process work? How do you know about it?
We have 12 villages that declared themselves FGM free. This process came through months and months of work with them. And previously, in the previous years, we also worked with them through different projects. These villages, like, they received almost daily trainings and daily seminars on these topics, how it should not be done, and what can we do to help out, and not just on FGM, but also various different topics related to domestic violence and their rights and all of these things. So these villages were ready to say that they are FGM free, and they will become an advocate in their areas, in the surrounding areas. So, and they had this like a very big billboard plate in front of their villages, declaring this village FGM free. And maybe you can imagine it, that this saying, this thing, like having this written in front of your village, it means something. And it means like this is something big, that for villagers, that admitting that this was a problem in their village, and now they are free from it, they are working for something more. And in exchange to saying those things, we did various projects for all of these villages. Like, some had water issues, some wanted their school school supplies. We had a very long standing agreement with one of these villages to send their daughters to school, because they were sending the boys to the secondary school, but they were not sending the girls to the secondary school because it was too far. So they were afraid that the girls will be harmed. So we managed to provide them with transportation. So all of the girls also managed to finish school in that village as well. So for us, this was like a very important coordination, because all of the villages in the surrounding areas, before, some of them, they were not even ready for our teams to go and discuss FGM. But when they saw that their neighboring village were brave and they talked about it, and there were no problems, like, they were afraid of social issues and problems. And
do you work with international organizations or NGOs which are supporting your work in Iraqi Kurdistan?
Yes, we work with Heartland Alliance on FGM. We did a major research with them. We work with Dutch Foreign Ministry on FGM, also with the German consulates here. We have really good relations with the consulates here. Also, we had projects with the State Department, with the U.S. State Department before. And we are in contact with the BMZ in Germany. They are supporting many of our projects as well, but mostly related to environment and awareness that are not specifically on FGM.
Do you think it's important to have the connections? Like, is it for the FGM process important to have like international backup?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it's really important because having those international connections and backups, they actually empower the organizations that are working here, and also kind of puts some sort of a pressure on the government here to really implement those laws and really follow through with especially related to FGM, to follow through with those cases. Unfortunately, so far we have the law, which is great, and it did a great part in reducing the acts. However, also so far, not one case has been prosecuted. Only two cases have been, there was an arrest case that in the police station. And then, because we have this tribal agreement that they say, because this woman is old, so it's better not to prosecute, just forgive her, it happened long time ago. So they fall into that pressure, and then they go with a tribal route, so they don't go for the full prosecution. So that's something we always want to pressure the government, that this tribal thing is eliminated from the law, and that the cases of prosecution does happen.
Yeah, thank you a lot for those valuable insights. How can individuals from Europe and private people like me support your work from Wadi?
We have our website over there. There is tons of information, tons of stories and things that you would like to read about. I just want to mention, like, for the Combating FGM program, we are now in the second phase of this program. First one was awareness. Now, second one is living with FGM, because the act has been reduced significantly. But then we have thousands of women who are cut and are living with long life consequences. So we are working with various groups of women now on reaching what are the health problems, how can we help them, how can we find experts that are helping women, especially on the sexual aspects. So if you read about these things, these programs of course need your support. So you can always support us through the website. All the information are there, so I hope people really do reach out, and for us any sort of visibility for these programs is important, and they're all one step ahead into making their life better.
We will as well link everything in the text underneath the interview. Thank you. That was project coordinator Shuk Mohammed from Iraqi Kurdistan. Thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us here as well on MENA Talk. My name is Jasmine Arimi. Stay tuned for more conversations across the Middle East here on MENA Watch. Thank you.
MENA Watch, der unabhängige Nahost-Think-Tank. Besuchen Sie auch unsere Website. Dort finden Sie täglich neue aktuelle Berichte und ausführliche wissenschaftlich fundierte Hintergrundanalysen zur Geschichte und Gegenwart der MENA-Region.
Eine Produktion von MENA Watch, dem unabhängigen Nahost-Think-Tank. Auf unserer Website finden Sie täglich aktuelle Informationen und Analysen. Besuchen Sie uns.